California Report for Thursday, February 21st, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Myra. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995, and the California Healthcare Foundation and Cal Hospital Compare, a new website rating hospital quality in California at calhospitalcompare.org.
This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and KZYX.org on the World Wide Web. It's 7:04 p.m. this Thursday evening, and we're getting ready for Education Now.
On the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Well, good evening. My name is Athena Melville, and I'm your host on Education Now. And tonight I welcome Mickey and David Colfax, authors of Homeschooling for Excellence. They're here in the studio with me now. The whole title of that book is Homeschooling for Excellence: How to Take Charge of Your Child's Education and Why You Absolutely Must. Published in 1988, it received praise on a national level. In 1992, they released a second publication titled Hard Times in Paradise. The experiment Mickey and David Colfax started in 1973 here in Anderson Valley proved that children will learn, will aspire to excellence, if we recognize and respect their different interests and abilities and give them a chance to develop them. That's what Mickey and David say in their book. Their approach reinforces the best practices outlined in the research by child development specialists and the most current neuroscience. Although the Colfaxes tell us they use no particular educational philosophy, they simply followed each of their children and responded to the unique interest of each, believing that every child is gifted in one way or another. The tragedy, they remind us, is that this truth was denied every day in word and in action in our schools then, and perhaps even more so today. So welcome, Mickey and David, to the airwaves of KZYXNZ.
Thank you very much, Athena. We're delighted to be here tonight.
And that's Mickey.
Good evening.
And that's David. Well, Mickey and David have four sons: Grant, who was born in 1965, Drew, who was born in 68, Reed, who was born in 1970, and Garth, who was born in 75. All are independent and pursuing work they love, as well as starting their own families, which is extremely exciting to me. I wanted to start, first of all, by going directly to the book and the crisis in education, as both of you put it in your book, started in 1959, just 2 years after the ascent of Sputnik, an event that precipitated that era's crisis in education. Blame for America's having fallen behind the Russians was attributed in large part to the schools. Educators were given a clear mandate to get the nation back in the Cold War race for space, and educational excellence was the rallying cry of the day. But, David and Mickey go on in their book, it was a time of educational change, one in which teachers were able to take advantage of renewed public and government support for education and encourage innovation and creativity in the classroom. For those in the middle-class suburban schools, such as those in which Mickey was teaching at the time, this was a good time to be a teacher. One had access to new materials, ideas, and methodologies, and was encouraged to demand the very best, unconstrained by older and now discredited approaches from students. But other forces were at work as well. Even as teachers were being encouraged to promote creativity and innovation, the federal government, with the first of what were to become a near avalanche of mandated and categorical programs, was beginning to intrude into historically locally controlled public education. Within a decade, local control of school districts was transferred primarily because of changes in patterns of funding to state and federal agencies. Sputnik had in effect transformed American education into a centralized system in which organizational men and women, administrators and bureaucrats, rather than teachers and students, became the key players in a very big, very expensive game. It is a legacy which haunts and poisons the classroom a generation later. That's remarkable. Comments there from either of you?
Well, I think here the interesting thing is that was written about 25 years ago, so we're talking about another generation in which, having sat on the county school board for 13 or 14 years, so many things that is of the order of what we wrote about and were finding problematic back in 1983, 84, when our boys were getting a lot of attention on educational matters.
Yes, well, this was written in 88, and here we are now, and I can tell you, it hasn't gotten better. And it's not the teachers. Some of them work so hard to bring these best practices into their classrooms and keep it child-centered. But it's so difficult. It's like pushing a rock up a very steep hill. It's not an easy task, that's for sure. I thought, and also something you say is, but of course the problem is not so much one of how teachers are perceived or how they perceive themselves, but that American schools have become, for a variety of good and bad reasons, industrialized, centralized, hierarchical, and standardized. And whereas these organizationally rational characteristics may be entirely appropriate to the production of automobiles or television sets, they are clearly antithetical to education. In practice, industrialized education means that almost from the moment a child enters school, he or she is age-graded, sorted, labeled, and resorted according to currently fashionable criteria. This is assembly line education, in which the child is processed over the years much like a can of soup or a piece of hardware. That's just... Any comments there?
I do believe that not much has changed since we wrote that 25 years ago, and that's most unfortunate. But I want to make sure that we don't spend the hour complaining about the teachers, because I do think that they have a daunting task. And the teachers that are in Anderson Valley and in the county, I think, are doing their best in trying to work within that framework that you just described.
Yes, I agree with you. I don't blame the teachers. I really feel that the minority are what give them a bad name, but the majority of them are working very, very hard. And I have brought to the airwaves here on Education Now people in the public system who are doing just that. But I keep thinking about how much easier and how much support we could give them if there was just the kind of system we had in California when it was second only to New York. And when even college was free in California, when class size never went beyond 24 students, and there were usually a teacher and an aide in the classroom, when music and art and everything was a part of it, and when parents were encouraged to come in and be there, I don't know how much of a part being mandatory is. I know that if you ask a child, "Do you want to be here?" and the child says no, then there's no buy-in in the process. And so this idea that it's mandatory, I don't frankly know what I would have, you know, when I was homeschooling and then when I was doing a private school, children had to want to be there. You couldn't be there unless you wanted to be there.
Well, I think that's really kind of a key to all of this. If we look at the parents and they want their children to get a good education, there's kind of a myth out there that if kids go to school, the teachers will take care of it, the administrators will take care of it. And yet all the research that's out there shows that parental involvement, whether you're homeschooling or not, whether you're interested in science or art or music or sports, it's parental involvement that is the key variable in all this. And I think that's why homeschooling really kind of gets out there and has really an advantage, simply because instead of having 25 students you've got to take care of, perhaps half of which whom are not terribly interested in being there that morning. That's number one problem for any teacher. And then the other side of it is that the parents are turning their kids over to a system that really is doing its best. But the problem is we underfund education, we underpay teachers, we recruit from a particular class of students to become teachers who are not adequately compensated for the work they do. And given that whole situation, schools are almost designed to fail. And I think that's the part of it here, that when schools succeed, we make a note of it. Now, there are some kids that can go to the worst school in the world and come out with a great education. There are some kids who go into a school system with terrific enthusiasm and have it burned out of them by the third or fourth or fifth or sixth or 12th grade. And so you see this kind of pattern. But the major factor in all of this is getting kids who have parents who are involved in the process. And here in Mendocino County, we have something called First Five, which is funded by tobacco funds, and we've got a number of really innovative programs. We've got a great director, we've got a great board, but First Five is out there taking care of kids from a prenatal to the age of five. They talk about school readiness, and it bothers me sitting on this for now 8 or 9 years, it bothers me a little bit because I keep thinking, no, not school readiness, but that's the term we use. But it should be education readiness. But on the other hand, that's not the right word either, because they've learned more in the first year of their lives than they'll ever learn in the subsequent 65 or 90 years, that they're, if they're lucky to live that long. So I think what is really critical to any discussion of homeschooling is to understand that it really takes the idea of parental involvement to an extreme. And that's where Mickey and I were out there so many years ago, talking to so many groups across the country saying, we've got to be involved, you've got to be involved with your kids, but don't become over-involved and don't expect others to tell you what's the right thing or the wrong thing to do. Trust your instincts. Crosby, Stills, and Nash there saying, teach your children well. Unfortunately, we wanted to use that in this book that we turned out. We wrote to them, and we never heard from Crosby, Stills, and Nash, so we never got the opportunity to use that that line.
Just to follow up a little bit on some of the comments that you made earlier about the politics of all of this and underfunding for the schools, I was listening before we arrived in the studio to Obama and Clinton debate And I have to say I was quite gratified because education was a main theme along with healthcare. So perhaps we can get back to getting more monies into the states and getting back to making California number one in education. When we moved here, California was very high in the ranks, and it has just plummeted. And the other thing I would like to say in terms of homeschooling sort of being tailor-made for the child, and this arbitrary number that at the age of 5 or 6, a child is taken out of the home and put into an educational system, where did that number come from? Why at the age of 5 or 6 does a parent have to give up the child? Because the parent has taken on the responsibility of educating that child for the first 5 or 6 years of his or her life. It seems that somehow this arbitrary number should be, we should try maybe 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Perhaps we could say, well, some children are ready at 6 or 7 and others are not ready until they're 10 or 11 or 12 to be to be put into an institution-like setting.
Right. I know that in Palo Alto, they have award-winning schools, and I've observed there. And as well as providing a great deal of choice for parents of different pedagogical styles, also with Prop 13, they didn't do it. They wouldn't cut their taxes. They kept their taxes set so that money still went to the kids. So there's still music. There's still art. There's still drama. There's still farms. And, you know, so much. It's wonderful to see. And I know that you can't solve everything by throwing money at a problem. But this is important. And I can't think of a better way to spend money, really. The only criticism I have is that they have all these choices, but there's all this driving to your choice. And, you know, which doesn't, the neighborhood school, you know, doesn't solve that problem. But in terms of being small and having, you can find schools where there's several levels all together and they're not sorted out in terms of, you know, some tests that they took. That's wonderful. And you can, and the children, then of course, they buy into it because it's something that they like, that they want. Which I think is a big part of it. I also wonder how you feel about Head Start. Now, I noticed that when you brought up this, you know, who's to say that 5 years, you know, they should go to school. Well, I know that there was research because we know that, just as you point out in your book as well, that 0 to 6, and that David brought up tonight, is the most important time in a child's life, in a human being's life, really, and really in the uterus, probably. I mean, my whole case for being pro-choice is a wanted child already has a leg up, you know? And then that environment in the womb, how that goes is so important. And then the breastfeeding and all of those things are so important to that child's life, so that really, I mean, borrowing money to be able to stay home with that child from 0 to 6, if you possibly can, because the statistics say that the child who has been with the parents from 0 to 6 does better not only in school but in life, whereas the child that's been in toddler program or there's even infant care, they don't do as well in the rest of school and in life. But that statistic isn't popular because it goes against the grain of universal preschool.
Well, there's also the issue here, I think, with regard to the way in which our economy has changed over the last 40 years, and maybe not even that far back. But given what's happening to the distribution of income in this country in the last 40 years, given the destruction of unions, given the way in which we've had administrations that have been more interested in keeping a war economy going rather than a culture intact, We have a situation where we simply focus on the kids rather than focusing on the families that need support. And when you've got two parents who have to work in order to make ends meet, and now we're talking here, how do you make ends meet in this economy? They're talking around $55,000 a year is necessary to make a living in an ordinary suburban or urban environment. And that's not adequate. But for most parents, taking care of their children's education is something that they do not have the luxury to do, and that is something that fits very nicely to some of the more reactionary programs in this country, which is to have a docile workforce. But you want a docile, trained, or capable workforce. You want them to have some ability. You want your workers to have some ability to follow instructions. So what happens? The schools, particularly schools in low-income areas, focus so heavily on following instructions, standing in line, being quiet, being orderly, and so forth, because this is not what is out there in the culture that they come from or the community in which they're growing up. So the schools are really being used as a mechanism to solve a problem that is much more involved. And I have to give credit to the educators in Mendocino County here who aren't comfortable, some of them, who I've talked to over the years, who say, you know, really, we should not be responsible for solving the social problems of the communities. We should not be responsible for addressing unemployment or low wages or seasonal work in the culture. But in fact, that's exactly what we do. And then we turn around and say, gosh, how come these kids aren't doing well? And we have an administration run by people who send their kids to high-class, very expensive private schools, or grow up in communities where the schools are even better than the private schools. And they're the ones that are setting policy, which are essentially saying, we want to make sure that your kids meet these standards. And so we are spending more and more money every year on standardized testing, which is probably one of the most disgraceful things that's ever been introduced. And there's just a little break in that system right now. But you can't blame the administrators who are now being punished when their schools don't do well, which is to say they may as well build a moat around the school and say, if you aren't smart enough to know how to build a boat and get across, you can't come to this school. But if you can make it in, you can help raise our standards. I'm being facetious here. But the reality is here is school composition, economic background, those are the kind of things that are related so firmly that we keep talking about education when we should be talking about poverty and inequality of income and communities that are underdeveloped and even undercut and eviscerated over the last 40 or 50 years. So education is part of a whole thing here that we kind of pulled back 25 years ago and said, we're going to have this luxury of being able to raise our children in such a way they become, we hoped, useful and worthwhile citizens. And I think they've achieved that to some extent. But we wanted to make sure here that we did not turn our kids over to what back in 1973 here in Anderson Valley was not a very good school system. And it wasn't because the teachers were a problem. It was because the locals did not want to support the schools to the extent that any community should. So I think this is a whole complicated situation, but with the new administration, we'll be hearing new things about educational reform, yada, yada, yada. But the real question, the thing we have to keep our eye on, is are we going to do things to build communities that allow parents the luxury of dealing with their children, treating their children well? And I am not very optimistic about that. But again, at least we have some change on the horizon, and it should be interesting.
Yes, we do have some change on the horizon, and I am very hopeful. And the child coming to the classroom ready to learn means that their emotional needs have been met, and they're not hungry and all of those things. And that's true. School wasn't meant to be that. That's not what was meant to happen. But then I think also someone's been trying to call us. And I didn't want to interrupt David, but it's 7:28 now, and the phone lines are 895-2448 or 1-800 895-2447 if you want to call in. Once again, that's 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. And I'm sorry we didn't get to you, whoever it was that was trying to reach us, but I didn't want to interrupt. One of the things I wanted to be sure to mention was how impressed I was that you used the community. In other words, you didn't isolate the children. You were using the community here in Anderson Valley to, is that right?
That is absolutely true. When we started teaching our children at home, because the word homeschooling really didn't exist, at least for us in the early 70s, the big question was socialization, the big S word, they called it. So we made an extreme effort to try to involve them in as many of the community activities as we could. 4-H was a huge part of their life. Two of our sons were thought they were athletes, so the schools very generously allowed them to play on the teams. They were runners. We had a good friend of ours who was very active with KZYX, Bruce Herring, taught one of our, or two of our kids how to use a computer, which was a very, it was something quite new in those days in the mid-70s. So we did try to make use of the community. The health center was something, another place where two of our children went to intern and learn. So we tried to explore as many possibilities in the community as we possibly could, and we were very grateful for all the help that we received in those areas.
Yes, and all of the farming, all of the gardening, all of the life skills that those kids got, life skills which are equally important. I mean, especially when you're hearing today, someone wants us on line 3. Shall I take it?
Sure. Sir.
Here we go. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Well, I wanted to make this one comment because I think it's important to remember that there are also people out there like fundamentalist Christians, and they want the right to educate their children at home. But the kind of education they're going to receive is going to be really terrible. And the other thing is it depends on your educational level whether or not you're really going to be able to educate your children at home. And if you have, you know, parents who barely made it through high school and can barely read and write, and they keep their child at home or children at home to teach them, you know, those children are going to be at a huge disadvantage. And so you have people that have very, their concepts and beliefs are so strong, and they want to force that onto their children. And so if they educate them at home, they can do that. So I think it's very important that every state have certain requirements and check in on all of the homeschooling homes to find out what is going on in that home, because some people believe in beating their kids up. And if they're homeschooling them, well, you know, the child has no way of, nobody's going to be able to report it because very few people will be aware of it. And I just think there's things like that where the state needs to be on guard and intervene in cases.
Okay,
like
we're going to give you an answer. I'm going to take you off air, and you can listen on air.
First of all, I'd like to say that we separate ourselves completely from the evangelicals.
Yes.
We were not homeschooling for religious reasons. People homeschool for various reasons, philosophical reasons, convenience reasons. Some do it for religious reasons. But there are certainly all different approaches to homeschooling. Some homeschoolers mimic public education. Some homeschoolers give a total freedom to the child, which was more our approach. So I think I will let David respond to the questions about how the state should intervene with the homeschoolers at home.
Well, I think I appreciate your the caller's concerns. There can be abuses. The interesting thing is that over the 30 years or so, there have been only a few, in any way, publicized episodes where someone happens to call themselves homeschooler when, in fact, they are neglecting their children. A homeschooler, a homeschooling family that we come into contact with, the typical homeschooling family we come in contact with and did over those years, many of whom were fundamentalist. We found ourselves talking to fundamentalist groups in South Carolina. We found ourselves in Utah a number of times talking to families whose politics were so diametrically opposed to those of Mickey and mine that we found ourselves being involved with them at the level of what do you want your children to do, what do you want your children to become. And part of our mission, if you will, was to give them a sense that they should back off and allow the children to define their own world. And I think we were, I think, pretty successful. Our homeschooling book is not a handbook on how to do it. And that's the thing that I think made it very attractive to many people, because a big part of our message when we went out to these conventions, and we spoke at dozens of statewide conventions with a whole range of people there, and we were emphasizing the fact of relax. This is not an enterprise where you have to turn out super kids, and relax. There are whole different ways of looking at the world. Now, let me come to my bottom line on all this, is that I strongly disagree with the caller. I know their intentions are well formed, but I strongly disagree with the idea that the state should be somehow or other taking care of education. And my evidence for this is the state cannot take care of the kids they have already got in the schools. If you have as a standard that the state should have standards, I'll put up homeschooling kids. I was amazed. I was actually choking up at the Board of Supervisors meeting just last week. A 9-year-old girl and a 12-year-old boy came and spoke about a quarry and their opposition, their community opposition to it. Some 50 people spoke that time. Most two articulate people in that event were the two kids. I had no idea until after I went down to, into the audience during a break to congratulate them on the fantastic job they had done. And one of the adults turned and said, "Oh, well, they're homeschooled. We know you. You're the homeschooling parent over in Boonville." But my point being is, all things considered, if there are abuses of kids, we do have agencies. Child Protective Services does an amazingly good job in most areas, but we cannot have standards of education being imposed. One of the good things about California is that every time there has been a move on the part of the government, the educational establishment, if you will, and again, bureaucrats out of the State Office of Education, they are the ones who fail to get their agendas through because they cannot compete. They simply cannot compete with those kids as a group who are homeschooled. Now, the politics of it are different, but again, I know a lot of people don't agree with my politics. I know some people that don't agree with Mickey's politics, and we don't agree with each other on some things. But the reality here is, if there are people teaching their kids the wrong thing about the world, we want to have kids out there who are smart enough to recognize it, because I'll tell you, I know that in our school systems today, we're teaching a lot of kids wrong things about the world and the way it operates.
Yes, we are, and we're not keeping up with the current science and the current research. And also, you know, if you're not isolating, which is what Mickey was talking about and I was talking about just before, then there's not this question of what if that child's being abused. There are so many children being abused in public school. So I don't want to go there. And then about how much education you need to teach your child at home, that I don't agree with the caller about that either. If you want to do it, if you're a parent and you have the time and desire, you can do it. There's another call. Shall I take it? Okay. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. Excuse me. Hi, this is Diane Padgett, and I, too, am a homeschooling parent, and I just had to call in and refute the woman who was sure that fundamentalist Christians would ruin their children forever if they homeschooled them. I'm not a Christian. That's not at all my philosophy. But I have known fundamentalist Christian homeschooling families who have done wonderful jobs, very, very creative, interesting, provided their children with very creative, interesting curriculum, and who have very successfully homeschooled their children. And I guess I just want to say that just as I had a right to raise my children as political radicals and as pagans, Christian families have a right to raise their children as Christians. This is what separation of church and state and the First Amendment are all about. So thank you for letting me in. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
We've got another caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Thanks for the show tonight. I really appreciate it. I was listening to the show last week, and I'm wondering if the guests that are on tonight were the folks that were on last week, the gentleman and yourself.
No.
Okay. Well, then I'm totally off base.
I had a woman on actually last month.
Okay.
Cheryl Charles.
Yeah. I apologize.
But David was on air recently with Norm Duvall, I think.
Yeah, about a week ago.
So you may have.
We didn't get into education too.
Sorry. It's because I live in Lake County that I'm so confused. Is that it? I'm like a mile over the boundary line. But David, are you an editor or something, one of the local newspapers?
No, I'm a county, the 5th District supervisor.
Oh, cool.
In Mendocino County, and have been for about 9 years now.
Well, cool. I really appreciate everything that you're saying tonight, and in regards to the lady that was worrying about or had issues with could she get good home care or homeschooling sort of in a Christian line. What a difficult thing, right? This is America. People should be able to do that. But do I need to remind everybody there's a thing of a difference in church and state and that type of thing, and doing it in a way where nobody's going to be heard. There's room for everybody in this society. Anyway, I'll let you go. I thought it was a show that I'd listened to last Thursday evening. I do a television show down in the Bay Area. I've been doing it for 20 years, but I heard somebody say that, and I thought it was you, David, and I apologize, and he was talking about the Indian gaming regulation that had passed, but of course it failed in Mendocino County, mm-hmm. but it had passed, and he came across as like, wow, well, I guess everybody just loves to, gamble. I thought, wow, man, it's a cheap shot, and there was nobody to...
Well, thank you for calling in.
Take care of yourselves. Thank you for
Bye
the
now.
Program.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to call and thank you for talking about this issue. I happen to be a public school teacher, and I really appreciate... I appreciate both the work that Mickey and David have done in raising their own children. But, David, I wanted to thank you for mentioning the issue of poverty. But I want to go one step further. And when we bring it back to homeschooling, I think what I wish to say as a public school teacher is I want to bring the C word up, class. And not class in the sense of what I walk into every day in my student center, but class in terms of privilege. And I want to bring that to the table because it affects public schools. Because what happens, those who have the privilege to not have to be, to be able to make the choice, who don't have jobs that require that time of them, and who are able to stay home with their children, and their children benefit from their own educational background, they also remove those children and those people who have that time could be involved in the public school classrooms, contributing their expertise. And even those, and someone was disparaging in speaking to people from the Christian right, a lot of those people have a lot of skills to offer in our classrooms, have a lot of background and knowledge. They are not simply one-dimensional people. They may have animal husbandry skills. They may have knowledge of the woods. They may have, you know, all sorts of things. And my difficulty with the issue, it's an ongoing issue, but I feel that it allows people who have the privilege of time and position to give it just to their children, and not that their children are not deserving. But what it ends up doing is robbing and creating a two-class system, because those don't get the exposure to kids who come from other places, and it also separates by race.
Okay, well, I'm going to answer. I'm going to take your let you listen on air.
Great, thank you.
I'd like to take this one a little bit first. First of all, I want to say that I homeschooled, and you certainly couldn't consider me in anything but the lower class. And I can say that I have been to many homeschooling conferences, and that this issue about class really doesn't exist. That is a desire of the parent, usually a parent who chose to have a child regardless of class, who then realizes from all of their reading when they're pregnant and beforehand how important those years are, and then goes out and looks to see what's available and says, no, I can't sacrifice my child to this, to what's available to me here. I need to do this myself and seek out within the community help doing it. And then if the child's not happy, well, that's another matter. But and then also, if a person is taking public funds and they are doing any kind of a religious base, and it's sectarian, that's a different matter than homeschooling. And then, you know, that's like choosing to go to a Catholic school or a Seventh-day Adventist school. If you're paying for it or choosing it and not taking public funds, it's an entirely different matter. But having any kind of a religious base in a public school that's supposed to be non-sectarian is a conflict of interest, I would say, to taking that money. But I don't agree with taking all of mythology out of the classroom because you call that religion. So that's my take. Do either of you want to respond?
Yes, I think I'd like to pick up on, I think, what is a theme that runs through this homeschooling discussion. And having been a teacher, Mickey and I both taught in public and private schools, and in universities and in England. Mickey taught in Canada and England, as well as the United States. So, and one thing we know is there's nothing better than to have good students in your classroom when you're teaching. Welcome. I taught in a private school, and I taught in a state university, and kids that made it to the private schools were just a little better prepared, a little more interesting, had more resources. But I think you have to come back when you're talking about the kid from the point of view of the teacher who says, and we heard this many times, well, you're pulling the really smart kids off or the kids that could really make a contribution. But education is not something, from my perspective here, I think we need to step back from it a little bit. Education is not something that should be seen as a social reform movement. We have politics for that, we have communities for that, but you don't send your kids to a bad hospital to be operated on or to a bad dentist so that they can practice. It would be good because it would benefit other people. We do have a class system, and it's so profoundly established when we have almost all of our political leaders who have teenage children who are out there going to private schools, and we don't get the same kind of critique of the private schools that we get of homeschooling, because homeschooling has a kind of anarchistic actually a lower middle class flavor to it. And so in that sense here, our kids, just to give an example, our kids were out there, and we were out there as 4-H leaders. We were out there as with our kids going and being involved in all kinds of activities. We could have probably pulled back from a whole range of social interactions. And there are some homeschoolers who do that. I'm not saying that homeschoolers automatically become better at anything than kids that are not homeschooled. But the reality here is I don't think we should be using our kids as instruments of change. I know it make my job easier as a teacher and your job easier as a teacher to have the good kids in there making your job better and, incidentally, now under the system, pushing up those classroom scores. But the reality here is you got to give your kids, in my opinion, you've got to give your kids the best possible education you could get. And since I could not afford, Mickey could not afford to send our kids to the best prep school in America or the worst private school, who knows what the best private education would have looked like. But we chose to do it on ourselves and take by ourselves and take that responsibility. But I would never say, let's put our kids in institutions that are so likely to damage than they are to enhance the bright kids. And that's not across the board, but again, I want to emphasize the fact that we should not be putting our kids forward to get bad medicine, to get bad education, to get bad music,
no.
and so forth. So I disagree with that premise, but I understand why it's a reasonable perception.
That's just diametrically opposed to best practices. Well, we have more callers. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, all three of you, for this fascinating discussion. I have a question. In order let me start differently. One of the main reasons, if I raised several kids in both private and public schools, homeschooling to me, even though you know I come from a fairly broad-based and free-thinking background, homeschooling was never an option that even occurred to me. So the question I have is, I actually have two questions. One is, how can you help raise the level of awareness and make young people aware of the fact that this is a tool and an option as a parent that could give your children a different path if you're uncomfortable about sending them to public schools, and I certainly would be if I had kids nowadays. I certainly would be very afraid. If my kids have to go through a metal detector in some of the bigger cities just to get into school, that should make any parent afraid, I think. And the other question I have is, it has to do with socialization. You mentioned that earlier. One of the big issues I saw in sending my kids to public school was the opportunity to socialize with kids that you really didn't want them to socialize with. Mm-hmm. And that was a sort of an ongoing process to steer them in the right direction. How does homeschooling address this issue, and how does it make a difference? Thank you.
I'd like to answer the first part of her question, Athena. There is a group in California called the Homeschool Association of California. They are a very active and engaged group. They send out a fabulous little, I think it's monthly, pamphlet. And I would like to give you their email address.
Their contact information.
Yeah,
I actually spoke for them in 2006.
It's hsc.org, or I can also give you a mailing address, which is, again, Homeschool Association of California, Box 77873, Corona, California, 92877. They hold an annual conference in Sacramento every year, and it's a fabulous conference. And
yes,
I'd urge anyone who wants to garner information, inform themselves about homeschooling, to attend. It's always the last weekend in August.
That's right.
And let's see, the socialization question. Do you want to handle that one, David?
Well, I think the caller touched upon it. I think you have anti-socialization taking place in some of our schools, and it takes a pretty strong kid in some of those situations to resist the peer pressure that's out there. On the other hand here, I think there's a more general question of, well, you don't want to have kids that can't talk to people or or shy or stay in their room and can't interact with folks. Homeschooling kids that we run into have generally outperformed kids of a comparable age. I mentioned those kids that showed up at the Board of Supervisors meeting last week, but I don't think they're all that atypical because they're out there in a situation where they're interacting with their peers sometimes are not their age peers. They're adults. They're interacting with people on a regular basis, and they're not age segregated, so they don't have the same pressures upon them. So you get a more rounded, more mature child in general, and sometimes perhaps almost precocious, if you will, character, which can sometimes be a little bit off-putting. But the other side of it is, I think here, that socialization is the least of one's worries as long as you give your children opportunities. The people at the Ukiah Library, Mendocino County Library over in Ukiah, were so helpful with our kids all those years, because we'd go over there to buy feed or do our grocery shopping and drop the kids off at the library, and they were happy to have the kids there because they got an opportunity to interact with younger kids and interact with adults and so forth. And there are people there who I know to this day remember our kids as those kids that would come in and take a whole pile of books out, but at the same time we're interacting with the whole range of people that end up in libraries on any given day of the week. So I think socialization is that bugaboo. But I would say if you have an opportunity to have your kids with you and your friends and their children, or you put them into a school situation where you don't know who's interacting with whom and who's in charge, and you don't have any control over that kind of situation, the latter is a bit riskier and a bit more problematic, I think.
Yes, the schools, from the researcher, the bigger they are, the more alienating they are, and the more you have all the same age groups, the same thing with the research is just more alienating. Small is beautiful. And then the peer teaching that was happening in your situation, that was so phenomenal. The younger, your older children were teaching the younger children. Those are skills that then they pass on. And I think at the end of the process, I had to bring this up, that they brought friends, and you did it like a summer camp where they sort of passed what they had learned on. This is so beautiful, and I've seen this with my own children. And but you know, I don't want to brag, so here I've got you, and I can brag about what you've done because it's so wonderful. And it's, and you're right, it's not for everyone, but anyone who wants to do it, who has the sincere desire to do it, should not shy away because of their educational level. When education started here in America, it was because people couldn't read and write. But if you know, most people have at least a high school, and many people a bachelor's degree, and yet they're told they're not to feel competent. I don't understand that. No, I don't. Well, it's 7:56, and I've got to do some housekeeping. We have one. Shall we take one more call?
Sure.
We'll be brief.
Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, wonderful program, by the way. I think it's so important to get the word out on homeschooling.
Could you talk a little louder?
I've got a cold, so it's a little hard to talk. I wonder if you, in the short time you have left, if you could address some of the problems with standardized testing that's going on in the public schools now, because I think it's... you're ending up with the schools going on being tested, but they're not being tested for better education, and it's hurting a lot of kids.
Okay, we're going to give you this on air.
Okay.
I'd just like to say one thing about that. Our kids were never tested. None of our children know what his IQ is because they never had any kind of intelligence test. But I'll let David, who was on the board of the county board, to address the issue of standardized testing in the classroom.
Well, I think here that the idea of standardized testing is something that's coming down as a mechanism. It's a control mechanism. Unfortunately, local districts, county school districts, don't have any choice in all of this. You forego your funding, you forego your teachers. It's a top-down model, extremely reactionary, based very much on certain assumptions of what I would regard as authoritarian education models. But I think here the idea of getting some ideas as to the concept that we need to get out there is the fact that homeschooling is part of a cultural context. And I would like to at least mention our book here, if I may, Athena.
Yes.
That is available, and it's Hard Times in Paradise, which we wrote to talk about not only homeschooling, but the context in which homeschooling seemed to work. And it has quite a bit on how our kids addressed things such as going to college, preparing for that different world, and doing well as they moved out of this, you know, the goat boy on the hill became famous, ended up even getting his picture in one of the weekly shock magazines, we saved it. But the reality is here is we have these kind of opportunities for all of our kids. It's too bad that they're not easily grasped. And I would like to recommend get in touch with us in Boonville, box 246, and we'll make sure you can get your hands on Hard Times in Paradise. The other book is available even now from any local bookseller.
Yes, they are. They're both available. And you can also contact Mickey and David. They're in the phone book under Colfax. So I thank you both so very much. And we're just really getting started. This is a hot topic.
Indeed.
I'm going to have you back.
We would be happy to do it. We've got years of talking about it, and sometimes we get carried away. But thanks, Athena, for giving us a chance to come down and talk about the olden days.
Thank you so very much. Well, there are new days for other people who really need your support.
Yes, they
and
are.
Encouragement.
And thank you, Athena.
Thank you so very much.
We appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you. You just don't know. Well, here we are, and saying goodbye to Mickey and David. It was so wonderful for me, and I want to tell you about some special programming on Friday tomorrow at 6 p.m. The Democratic presidential debate that David and Mickey were talking about with Hillary and Clinton and Barack Obama from Austin, Texas. That'll be at 6 p.m. tomorrow. Terminal Whimsy tomorrow night at 8 p.m. You won't want to miss that with Andrea. Stuff she's been saving for a rainy day. And Youth Speaks Out Sunday at 2 p.m. We'll rebroadcast an interview with that he did in 2001 with the first and only African-American teacher at Willits High. The episode was entitled Racism in Our Schools and won a Golden Reel Award from the NFCB. They will also air an interview with Michael Ferranti of Spearhead on youth and the media. I want to thank you so very much for listening and let you know that you can contact me at hermes@pacific.net. That's H-E-R-M-E-S at pacific.net. This show and all the shows heard on Education Now can be heard and downloaded for free at www.pacificsites.com/TildaHermes, or if you just Google Melville Montessori School, it will come up for you. Next month, on the 20th, we're going to have a focus on media and education. That's the 20th of March. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank the Colfaxes. I want to thank the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, who produces this show, and the staff here at KZYXNZ for all that they do. Stay tuned for The Treehouse, which will come up right after Earth and Sky, and then Dead Air. This is KZYXNZ 90.7 FM Philo, KZYX 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, and 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, Mendocino County, public broadcasting, community, locally supported community radio. And thank you to our listeners for underwriting tonight's show. Good night now, and stay tuned for Earth and Sky.